I think we can resume our session. Good morning, everybody, honorable members, and delegation of the Department of Science and Technology, as led by the Director General, Tutam Joafa. I would like, before we start our session, we observe a minute of silence in that the mother of our speaker, who is also a veteran of our struggle, passed on last week, as I think everybody knows. The president has announced that she will be honored by a state funeral, which means therefore that she belongs to this room. And therefore, I think it will be befitting for us, therefore, to have a minute of silence. I have been there myself during the weekend also to pay tribute on behalf of the committee and all other people of my constituents. So I think therefore we can rise and have a minute of silence. Thank you, honorable members. I won't be wasting time. I'm sure everybody knows that this is a very important briefing on two pieces of legislation. That is the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act, which is the act that was passed, I think, in 2009, no, I can't remember exactly. Eight. And it's a legislation that was put together to actually protect the zone of the SKA site. So, since some people are not familiar with this act, we thought it is important many new members that joined Parliament in 2009 when this Act was already in place. It is important for the department to really familiarize us with this Act, of what it means to the protection of that zone in the night of the SKA bid. But we also have another new piece of legislation which is seeking to streamline all other acts and modernize them, those that are a bit obsolete, into a consistent way of application and working. This is the Science and Technology Laws Amendment Bill, which is before us now here in Parliament. So we thought that it is also important for the department, before we invite all the stakeholders who to deliberate on their inputs, that the department, it's always a habit that the department first briefs the committee, and then we can then see the way forward as Parliament. Because once the piece of legislation is before Parliament, it cannot be reversed. It is in the hands of Parliament, and Parliament can do what it likes about it as far as logic prevails. So I'll not waste time. Before I start giving over to His Excellency Philip Joho, I will therefore ask our members to introduce themselves as our normal habit, so that we capture everybody here who is here whom we do not know. But I'll also like members of the media, if there are any, I can see one, to also introduce themselves, because we want to know who is here and who is not here. Before starting, I'll introduce myself as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. I'm Ngaba Ngobo. With my secretary, Shanaz, committee secretary, Shanaz Isaacs. And I've got also my office secretary there in upper sense at the back there. And then I have also the study group secretary, Granny. She's one of our new members of the study group. So while it is not very old, it's Granny, she's very young. Can you stand up, Granny? They can see, because they don't know you. Yeah, that's Granny. Yeah, okay, I think I have introduced myself and I can start here to my back with our whip.
Good morning, Chair, His Excellency, Senator, the new title, members of the committee, and staff and members of media. I'm Lindelwa Tunjwa, the whip of the committee from the African National Congress, residing in the Eastern Cape in Port Elizabeth. Thank you.
Chair, honorable members, and guests, I am Nkosi Moelo Nongonyana, the member of the Portfolio Committee, a deployee of the INC from the OR Tambo of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, I'm Marianne Shin from the Democratic Alliance.
Hi, Peter Smith, IFP.
Good morning, I am Vincenta, member of the committee from Asset Niswa District, Eastern Cape. Thank you.
I'm Martin Mokani, Special Advisor to the Minister of Science and Technology.
Good morning, I'm Tepo Seyegwe with the Department of Science and Technology.
I think members of the department must tell us what they do so that we know which area of responsibility each one has, so that we can be able to question if there's anything that we want to question. We must know to whom we direct our questions.
I'm responsible for various aspects of the square kilometer array in the department.
Dr. Makaveni. I'm from the Office of the Chief Medical Advisor. I assisted in the Science and Technology Law of Energy.
Good morning, members. It's Pumele Lengema from the Constitutional and Legal Services here in Parliament.
I'm Takadani Namongani from the Department of Science and Technology. I'm involved on the international lobby as far as the SKA project is concerned.
Good morning, members. My name is Brian Muto. I'm the head of legal services in the department.
Good morning. My name is Lerato Kumbi. I'm the head of HR, but currently the acting DDG Corporate Services.
Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. Malapa Pavela from the Department of Science and Technology.
Thanks, Chair.
What you do? We have just said that we want to know what to do. If you add, it means we want to hide something.
Chairperson, nothing to hide. I can't hide anything from Parliament. My name is Malapa Pavela, Deputy Director General for Human Capital in the Department of Science and Technology.
Thanks, Chair, honorable members, distinguished guests, Phil Joha, the Director General. Thanks, in the department.
I see there are people behind. I know our assistant, assisting Shanaz. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Sidon Mashabela,
committee assistant. I see some people behind there. I'm sure they are from PMG. Telcom. Okay. Thank you very much, all your excellencies. I respect you as all your excellencies. Can we then have a brief from the Director General?
Thanks, Chair. I just want to start by saying our understanding of this briefing is the first one is on the Astronomy Geographic Act, so we'll give a sense of what the Act is and maybe where we are. There are some follow-up actions in terms of work of central and coordinated areas as prescribed by the Act and declaring those areas. So we'll give you an update, as well as the authority that we are going to set up, possibly set up already in the department, to ensure that the regulations around the Act are implemented accordingly. But I'd like to ask Dr. Sigwe to do the presentation, and we'll be happy then to take the questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I'll start with the brief introduction and then the purpose of the Act, the milestones today, and then future declarations and regulations. Chairperson, I think you may be aware that the AGA Act was assented to in 2008 by the then President Halima Mutante. And since 2008, there's been quite a lot of activities in order to secure the investment that carries the Northern Cape for astronomy. Now, the purpose of the Act is to preserve the pristine conditions that we have in the Northern Cape that makes.
Can you speak not through the micro, please? Because I know, just move the micro closer.
The purpose of the Act is to preserve the pristine conditions that we have in the Northern Cape in order to retain the geographic advantage that the Northern Cape has globally to attract both optical and radio astronomy investment. It is because because of this act that we can then also have very strongly focused human capital development programs to make sure that together with the instruments that we're building in the Northern Cape, there is skills development happening in a very meaningful way. Now, the very first notice that we had to issue after the AGA Act was assented to by the President was the general declaration of the Northern Cape as an astronomy advantage area. According to the way the Act is structured, we firstly declare the Northern Cape, obviously excluding the Salt Lake municipality, and then you focus on doing the various small declarations around areas where the telescopes are. The map that we're looking at there is an indication of population distribution. If you look at the slightly purple color of the Northern Cape, that's where you have the least population density in South Africa. And it is because of that that you have very little light pollution and radio frequency interference in the Northern Cape. The next milestone after the general declaration was the declaration of the Northern Cape Optical and Radio Astronomy Site as protected areas. Now here I'm referring to the area where the telescope is located. So that is the land that is owned by the National Research Foundation on behalf of government, where we are busy constructing the Myerga telescope and also the land where the Salt telescope is located. So the map on the left hand side of the screen is that of the area near Sutherland, and where there is a light green color, that's where the Salt telescope is located in the Northern Cape. I'll talk a little bit about that later. And then the map on the right hand side, where there is a green dot, let me just point that out, where there is a green dot, that is where the Meerkat telescope is currently being constructed, and that is where the CAT 7, that is the first 7 dishes of the Karua Ray telescope, are located at the moment. The picture on the left, I'm sure you'll be familiar with, that is the Salt telescope in winter. Not sure if you just know this year yet, but every year it does snow in the Sutherland in the area. Sutherland area, because it's a high lying area. Now, subsequent to the declaration of the call, we then declared 3 key instruments that we see as essential for multi-wavelength research in South Africa, and that is the Salt telescope in Sutherland, the Meerkat telescope, and the SKA that we are currently bidding for. So we have declared them as protectable astronomy and related scientific endeavors instruments. It is essential so that when we get to the regulations that we have actually declared these 3 telescopes. Another aspect of the AGA Act is that there has to be an astronomy management authority. It is the authority that is going to be responsible for the implementation and management of the various astronomy advantage areas that we're going to have in the Northern Cape. Now, late last year, the Minister of Science and Technology issued a notice declaring the Department of Science and Technology as the custodian or the host of the Astronomy Management Authority. At the moment, we are headhunting for individuals that can closely match this job. I think it's important to mention that this is something that has not been done by any first one is the Central Astronomy Advantage Areas. The Central Astronomy Advantage Area is an area that is immediately outside the telescope site. So the area that is surrounding the location of each of the telescope. That is the Central Astronomy Advantage Area. And then the next one is the Coordinated Astronomy Advantage Area. That is the area that is now outside of the Central Astronomy Advantage Area. The reason for the three distinct Astronomy Advantage Areas was to ensure that we do not have unnecessarily stringent conditions all over the Northern Cape. So the way the regulations and the declarations are going to be structured is that within the core Astronomy Advantage Area, that's where we're going to have very strong regulations to make sure that there is absolutely no astronomy, no radio frequency interference, and there is very little or no light pollution at all. Whereas as you're going in concentric circle and moving out of the area hosting the telescope, we're going to have slightly relaxed regulations to make sure that there is coexistence of people and telescopes in the Northern Cape, because we are going to require the various infrastructure that's in the Northern Cape because the people are there, and there's going to be a need for essential services to make sure that whatever non-science requirements of the people that will be working on the telescopes are taken care of. So there has to be a way of making sure that there is a balance, and we envisage that having a concentric circle of increasingly relaxed conditions would be the best way of achieving that. Now, the next step is to follow the currently planned core Astronomy Advantage Area regulations, which are in the process of finalizing and gazetting, with the Central and Coordinated Advantage Area regulations. So we'll start with the regulations for the core and then move on to the regulations for the Central and Coordinated. So the first step was the declarations, which we are now about to complete. The declarations are then going to be followed by the regulations. So this is a multi-step process, and with each and every part or segment of the process, we are going to have public consultations throughout the Northern Cape. Recently, Cabinet also formed a task team which is made up of various government departments, and the purpose of this task team, in which the Department of Science and Technology and the SKA project is represented, is to probe the impact of hydraulic fracturing in the Northern Cape. And the team is currently being led by the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources.
Sorry, it looks like the teacher wants to add something there.
Yeah, I was hoping, Tsepo, I hope you remember, what is the radius of the areas core, central, and coordinated? So we can give a sense of, you know, the circle around the telescope for this central.
I do remember, teacher.
I think that is very important, because I think there are three regions around that core. So just to familiarize members, explain that.
Okay. Where the arrow is pointing on the left map, that green dot, that's where the SOL telescope is. And the first thing only limited to the Northern Cape, so it does not include any part of the Cape at all. And then the next part of the concept of the circle, that is a 250. So that's this area here.
Yeah.
So this is the 250 kilometer radius coordinated astronomy advantage area. And that is for optical astronomy. However, for radio astronomy, it's slightly different. It's not as straightforward as radius. What we realized as we are going through the various requirements for the telescope.
Just for a point of clarification, you must remember that we are policymakers, we are not scientists, although we manage science. And so, if you say optical astronomy and radio astronomy, we may not follow what we're talking about. So, if you can clarify and tell us exactly what is in the optical astronomy and what is in the radio astronomy, which telescope you are talking about, I think it would be helpful.
Solid telescope is an optical telescope. It means that it uses light. It's like a telescope that you can hold in your hand and look at the stars at night. So it's an optical telescope. It shows that solid is substantially bigger than the ones that people have in their household. It has a receiving or a mirror, which is 11 meters across. So it's a fairly big telescope. It just uses light, natural light, and it's a fairly straightforward process. And it works only at night, just as much as the telescopes that you can look at the stars with at home work only at night. So that's an optical telescope. On the right-hand side, that is a radio telescope. What it does is that it receives radio waves that were emitted several billion years ago, which means a very faint signal that is coming through the universe. The signal is picked up by a dish like the one that I'm pointing to there. So the dish surface picks up a signal, which is a radio signal, then concentrates the signal to the tip of this dish. The signal is then taken through the telescope wiring system to a computing center, and it is in this computing center that the radio waves signal are converted into images that are of astronomical objects. With the radio telescope, you can do observations day or night, and that's the advantage that it has. Now, with an optical telescope, when the sun is shining, you can't see the stars because it's during the day. It's too bright for you to be able to pick up celestial bodies. However, when you look at a radio telescope, what blinds it is not the sun, but it's radio frequency from other sources. So if you take one of these dishes and you put a GSM station or a broadcasting station right next to the telescope, you will not be able to pick up
said the report will be presented to the task team at the end of June. Is it not the task team that is supposed to prepare the report?
Within the task team, there is a technical team. The task team is led by the DG of TMO. I think the structure of the task team is such that it's not made up of the actual specialist themselves. It's a body that's going to coordinate various government departments. There is ESCOM also sitting on the task team. Now, the task team has appointed people that understand various aspects of the work that is required. So there's going to be a need for geoscientists, people that can understand.
The task team then comprise the technical team, which then, which is a term of technical specialists, which are then going to report to them at the end of June.
Yes.
I think that's what you need to clarify, because the task team has been set up, it will report to the task team at the end of June. So,
yeah. So within the task team, there is a technical team.
Okay.
And that was all from me, Chair. Thank you very much.
thank you, DDG. I don't know if members want us to interact with this, or they want us to have the board presentation first, so we deal with this first, okay?
What other
people do? There are still the amendment laws. You know, that's why I'm asking if members want all of presentation and then interrogate all of them, or you want to have piecemeal by piecemeal. Okay. So I see the first hand and the second hand in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's a couple of questions I'd like to ask. First of all, the task team. I'm going backwards. The technical team that's busy drawing up its information for the end of June, are astronomers included in that technical team? Are they going to be consulted? And then I'm also sort of concerned that this is being rushed an awful lot. This is quite a significant impact that this may have, you know, that this hydraulic fracking may have on a significant part of the country. And to have a deadline at the end of July seems to me that it's being rushed a lot, and I'd like to know perhaps why that is. Also would like to know whether this task team will inform the regulations under this Act that are still being drawn up, whether it has any bearing on the regulations that have been drawn up. Then the central area of salt, the core area of salt, is what, 3 kilometres. And then we have the central area, most of which doesn't fall within the Northern Cape, but falls in the Western Cape. So I'm wanting to know why that central area for salt didn't include the Western Cape, because it needs protection as well. And particularly with regard to light and dust pollution that will affect salt more than the radio astronomy, what steps are going to be in place to protect that? I notice in the Act itself there are some references to atmospheric things in the atmosphere that will affect the light for salt. I want to know how protected salt is. Because obviously a lot of the emphasis is on SKA and radio frequencies, but what are we talking about with salt? Because any activity, mining activity, which creates dust or light from gas flares will have tremendous impact on salt. And I think that we need to realize that they are as important to our astronomy as SKA. Also wanting to know, from my last time that I looked at this, that the core area around SKA has not been defined yet. I was told that this is an area of about 3,000 square kilometres, but that was a couple of months ago, that the core area of SKA hadn't been defined or declared yet. I wonder if you could tell us that, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. Just following your slide order, the slide dealing with the declaration of the Northern Cape as a whole as an astronomy advantage area, does that have any impact at all? I imagine not, but does it have any impact upon the areas outside the circles that you refer to later on? I mean, in other words, within the Northern Cape, you've got places that are very far from the center of activity. So what is the purpose of declaring the entire province as opposed to those areas an astronomy advantage area? Then going to a similar question Marion asked on the protected areas being semicircles rather than circles, I can see practically if you were to extend the outer boundary of the salt one, you would go right down to Cape Town virtually and up to sea, you'd include both the west and Mossel Bay and so on. So obviously it's not practical. But if you look at the map, the area immediately below the border seems to be fairly open. So you've got a ring taking you from Beaufort West to Otsu and to Robertson that all looks like pretty quiet areas. So my similar question to Marion is why was that circle not extended further south into the Western Cape? And then the second side of the same question is, if it's necessary to extend the circle the way you have into the Northern Cape, by not doing it in the southern area, what is the impact of activities there on the on salt or the potential activities? Then the Astronomy Management Authority, could you just talk a little bit about exactly what it's meant to do and how it's going to function? I presume it means that people who want to engage in certain activities will have to make application and get approval. But is that basically what it's going to do? Is it like a planning authority, like a licensing authority? And then finally, Chair, I see Telkom is here. Telkom obviously has an interest in all this. I just wondered if there's any issues here that are perhaps unresolved, which might involve other players involved in electromagnetic frequencies of some kind, maybe Telkom or anybody else, that is not yet fully resolved. Thanks.
Another emote? Honorable Mokonya?
Chair, and honorable members.
Next to the microphone, please.
Yes. Saying Chair and honorable members, thank you very much. First of all, Chair, thank to the department for the wonderful presentation. And to me, it's very, very clear. But what I would love to know is the impact of the AGA Act. As you know, when we visited there, of course, people were very happy, enjoyed the government, also people of Northern Cape. But in terms of this advantage, are there any other impacts that are visible in terms of job creation and even things for the people there thus far? And again, the needed intergovernmental relations between all the spheres of government, how is it? If you can share with us, I'll really appreciate those two things. Thank you, Sean.
It's a follow-up question.
Well, if that is on him, so if you're going to answer that sort of question, then perhaps you can also answer my point on that question.
Okay.
Thank you. This is in relation to the authority. Is that going to be merely managing the facilities of that? Because I'm wondering, because we now have, we don't really know what's going to happen to the astronomy desk. I'm just sort of wondering how many bodies we're going to have looking after astronomy, because we have an astronomy desk that may or may not be having a sort of permanent place in our lives. We have now this authority here. We also have the South African Astronomical Observatory. You know, are we not having a multiplicity of organizations managing astronomy, or is this merely about the facilities of this act?
I just want to also add some clarity. There is the new office which has been established, which is the Astronomy Development Office. Understandably, also there is an office which is managing somewhere overseas, or which is supposed to be there, or is already there. and there is now this authority that you're talking about, astronomy authority. Can you clarify how they relate to each other?
Thanks.
By the way, when we ask these questions, we are not necessarily directing them to him.
Mm-hmm.
And also the question should not be only located to what he said. If the member has got any other issue related to SKA project, in this act, because this is the act that we're discussing, the AGA. We can, if you want even some legal clarification, we've got lawyers here.
Chair, honorable members, thanks very much for this questions. I would like to take some questions and ask that board to take some. I will try and respond to the first question of the task team around the fracking, and then I would leave the issues around the areas and how they are declared for both the salt as well as for the radio telescope, the Meerkat to Tsepo. I do like to take a first bite on the cherry on the management authority. I will also try and respond to the global office for astronomy development that you raised and what its function is. Tsepo will probably take the question of Honorable Nongonyane around the impact of the AGA Act on the job creation and intergovernmental relations, because I think we've set up the structures to deal with those issues. On the role of Telkom, maybe we can talk about some of the conversation we're having with Telkom around the provision of the voice data through other means within the area. And I think in that case we will have covered all the questions. So let me then start with the task team. This task team's terms of reference is to using the technical aspects that Dr. Seko talked about, would be to understand this technology of trying to get gas in the Karoo. How does it work? You know, how deep do you have to go? What are the elements of it that are required in terms of the work that you do, how many people will be there? So it's really the understanding of the technology and the nitty-gritties of how you actually extract natural gas using this technology. So it would therefore not have astronomers, because the purpose of that task team is to report to Cabinet on what this technology is and how it works, and then give the feedback to Cabinet for Cabinet to make the necessary decision. Now, your secondary question was, as I say, that was the primary question, and then you asked whether the astronomers are going to be involved, and the answer is no. If there are people there who happen to be astronomers, you know, the terms of reference is not to have astronomers per se. Now, is this going to inform the regulations or will have any bearing? The answer is no, in the sense that what we are doing as a Department of Science and Technology, we are developing the necessary regulations arising out of the Act in order to ensure that these areas are protected, as Dr. Seko mentioned, for radio astronomy, as well as the optical astronomy work that we've explained earlier on. So the regulations are emanating from the Act, and what is it that you require in a practical way, and how you're going to make sure that the Act is implemented in a practical way. So this is done by the department in consultation with the astronomers, as well as the community, and we follow the normal public participation processes in order to ensure that the regulations have the inputs of the stakeholders that are required. And then the management authority is a structure that will be that has been set up in the Department of Science and Technology, as Zepo said, and its primary purpose is to ensure that once the regulations for the AG Act have been agreed,
This is the authority that will ensure that, in a sense, you know, all the regulations are adhered to. So it will be people who understand the regulations and will then be working with all the stakeholders in the area that are affected by the regulations and ensure even advocates work, because, you know, you don't want to only say you've broken the law, but you also need to just educate people what the law means, what you can and what you cannot do. So it's a structure that will be there to ensure that we adhere to the regulations, but also it ensures that people understand what the regulations are all about. The office, the Global Office for Astronomy Development, if you remember last year, Chairperson, the year was the International Year of Astronomy, and South Africa had played a very, very important role in this initiative. And one of the key things that, of course, we wanted to do as part of this International Year of Astronomy was to inform public about astronomy, what it is, and the benefits of astronomy, and the need for us to really understand the universe that we're in. And we then were asked to submit a proposal to have an office for astronomy development in South Africa. And the NRF and ourselves, we explored this possibility, and we submitted a bid to host this office here in South Africa. And we were given, I think, we won the bid, so there is this office for astronomy development, which is located at the South African Astronomy Observatory, SAO. And its purpose is really to create awareness, public awareness, and, of course, to excite the youngsters to follow careers in the area of astronomy. So it's, that's what it is and what it's meant
for. Who are other people?
Dr. Kabbalah, do you remember?
Through your chairperson, no, I don't recall who the other bidders were, but I suppose it's inconsequential now. But it is, this is the office of the International Astronomic Union, and not necessarily South Africa's office. We are the host.
That's why I'm asking that question, because I know that it comes from an international body, and I wanted to know, I wanted that to reflect the competency of us in terms of other bidders. See, that's my aim.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I think to answer that question is we don't know, but we can provide the information. But one of the reasons why we won the office is because of the director of the office and how he was successfully during the year of the International Year of Astronomy was driving programs for public awareness in astronomy in South Africa. And I think the international community, I think, noticed the work that he was doing. I think Dr. Kavanagh is his name, and it was really on the basis of the work that he had done that we were selected as the host for this. And the work is not necessarily for South Africa, but I think it's for developing countries in general. So we'll be having that public outreach for astronomy-related activities out of this office, but I think it's not for the borders of South Africa. Before Tepo answers the Honorable Shin's question of the core of the SKA not being defined, I think we may probably need to understand the question, because I think Tepo can talk about the definition of the area, but I wasn't sure whether you're referring to the core of the area or whether you're referring to the baseline for the SKA and how far it has to extend for the SKA to do the kind of science that is expected. That, as far as I remember, is an area which is being explored by the SKA Global Office to say, do you need baselines that would extend up to Kenya as well as Ghana, or do you need baselines that are shorter than that in order for you to be able to do the same thing? And I know that the Global Office of the SKA is busy looking at how far the array of dishes have to extend in order for you to deal with two issues. One is the cost issue, because the further you go away, the more dishes you need, and therefore that costs a lot of money. But at the same time, if you don't have the arrays extending long enough, you will not be able to do all the science that
My understanding was that's what you were asking rather than the definition of the core, but we're happy to find out from Honorable Sheen if that is the question, because before we respond, we could be responding to something about that.
I think I did pick up. I noted the error of her question. The core, actually, I'm one of the people who processed and developed this legislation. So the core, actually, the 3,000, let you say 3,000 square kilometers is not, it's actually 3,000 dishes that are supposed to be in the core area. I think that is where she meant to probably find out what the core entails. That core has got 3,000 dishes by the orientation, right, the designation, whatever.
So if that's correct, I think it's the baseline, what is called, of how far the dishes are.
I'm reading an email here from an astronomer, which says, and again this was a month or two back, which says at this stage the final core area of the FKA project, which at this stage sits at 3,000 square kilometres, is not talking about dishes.
All right, so I'm not sure if Zeppo would like to take a bite on the cherry, but I mean if you're talking about 3,000, which is the baseline for how far the dishes have to extend, we understand where the person is coming from, but 3,000 square kilometers as the area for the core of the telescope itself, we would be very, very happy to engage with that astronomer offline so we can clarify. Thanks. Zeppo?
Thank you, DG. Perhaps I could start with the one around the core of the telescope. The intention is that the total FKA will have a minimum 1,000 kilometer baseline, which means that from the center of the telescope in the Northern Cape near Kanabi to the outermost station, the distance will be 3,000 kilometers. I think that's where the 3,000 kilometer comes in. It's highly unlikely you can fit in the core of a 3,000 kilometer anyway, unless perhaps you start looking at the extent of this end. But it's highly unlikely because you need to spread it out, I think, fairly evenly. As you're going out, the dishes become fewer and fewer, but they are more concentrated within the core. Now, depending on the size of the dish of the final SKA, which is likely to be between 12 and 15 meters in diameter, you're going to have between 3,000 and 4,000 of these dishes. So that's where the other 3,000 comes in. So there are several of these 3,000, but there is no intention at all to have a core of 3,000 kilometers. Not here, and not in Australia.
Can you allow me to finish? Then okay, I can have a follow-up question. May you finish first?
I think there was a question on the Northern Cape from Honourable Member Sheen around why not the Northern Cape is not going to impact negatively, why those rings don't go into the Western Cape, especially the much smaller diameter one, like the 75 kilometer one. When we were negotiating the final bill before it came before it became an act, the key issue was we need to think about economic development as well as astronomy. If you look at the areas in the Northern Cape, that are hosting the current telescope compared to when you take it out of the Northern Cape, it does create several challenges because then Cape Town will also be affected, so would Stellenbosch and various areas. The Act does allow at some point, if there is a need, for us to start a process of designation of going to actually restrict anything and everything, and this is what it means, which is why it was immediately accompanied with an explanation that this is just a general declaration. It does not in any way prohibit any activities. Now, the designation process is a little bit more stringent than the current process that we have undertaken. You start firstly with a designation, do public consultations, which will probably include areas like Hermanus and Cape Town. I think coming out of that, then a decision can be made whether is it to astronomy and other activities advantage to have a declaration. So the designation is the first step. If at that point there is a determination that it might not be favorable, we will not proceed with it. But if it indicates that the conditions may not be that stringent, that people can meet them. If you look at Cape Town from a satellite picture at night, you can see that it's glaring very brightly. And this is one of the discussions that the South African Astronomical Observatory has been having with various offices within the Western Cape to try and find a way where mutual benefit is extracted. Now, one of the things that we were informed of that worked very well in some parts of the USA was that once you start looking at ways of doing lighting on the ground and less lighting up, that is restricted lighting, you just light what you need to light on the ground, you actually start saving money, because then the sort of systems that you design and the light bulbs that you use are such that your account as a municipality for electricity actually goes down. So these are some of the negotiations that we know that our observatory has been having with various areas to try and see ways of finding common interest. Obviously, there is going to be a need for an initial injection of capital investment, but in the long run, studies in the U.S. have demonstrated that you can start saving some money with this contained lighting systems.
Honorable Smith, you can put a follow-up question then.
Well, Chair, thank you. But before I do the follow-up, maybe the questions I asked earlier, if I could just get clarity on that. I had a similar question to the one you were answering, but the second half of the question was, if you take the outer circle, the optical, right, you talk about the Cape Towns and all the rest, we can understand it's a practical problem and it's rather silly to try and include them. But the immediate area stuff, what was the problem of that being declared part of the central zone? Because if you look at the map, at least, there doesn't need to be anything there, at least in terms of town.
Can you put
on the map, please, so that
all of us can be...
Yeah,
I'm looking at the screen.
Yeah, if you take the map on the left, Chair, that central circle, if you know, take the outer circle first, obviously if you extrapolate those lines, you go right the way down to Cape Town to Mossel Bay, so it's ludicrous to declare that anything, I should think. But the inner circle, the pale blue, if you look south of the border, it seems to be fairly empty. Well, Robertson on the south, Oatson on the right, Burford West on the right. So my question was, why wasn't that initial sort of semicircle extended into the western Cape? Not the outer circle, but just the inner circle. And then secondly, is there any negative impact of not so declaring? Because presumably if you're trying to prohibit certain areas north of the border and those same activities are taking place south of the border, presumably it could be negative, I don't know.
And then my follow-up question earlier to the issue of SKA, Jay, was if we take the right-hand map, And we look at the location. We don't have it here now, but one of the earlier presentations made at SKA, which showed us the location of the dishes. I'm just trying to get some sense of, on the right-hand map, how many of the dishes that are in South Africa are located within those square hexagonal links, or rings, whatever they are. money would be located there. And as they go beyond those lines, those circles, what form of protection is there for the individual dishes or clusters of dishes in respect of the electromagnetic pollution?
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think there was also a question from Telco that you raised earlier on. The SKA project office has been working with Telkom. We have also been liaising with the Department of Communication to try and find a way of improving both voice and data services to Telkom. And it's one of those processes. For the inner circle, I think the way the act is structured, if I may just explain using the picture, the way the act is structured is that within the Northern Cape, we can start with a declaration. Outside of the Northern Cape, we have to start with a designation. So these are separate processes. We couldn't have done them at the same time. If, as opposed for the ease of practicality from our side, the way we envisage it is that that circle can certainly go into the Northern Cape. There is nothing that stops into the Western Cape. There is nothing that prohibits for that to happen. It's just a separate process that is required for that to happen, which starts with obviously a designation and we start engaging various communities. Technically, there's nothing that stops. On the SKA, your question, if I understand you well, is that how many of the final SKA dishes are you going to have in various areas, and how are we going to protect those outside? I'd like to make an example with a country like Mauritius, where we're going to have some of the stations of the SKA. Because Mauritius is a small island, there is nowhere where you can go in Mauritius where there is no radio frequency interference. However, we still go into a station in Mauritius. Because these are interconnected dishes operating as one, if there is a signal picked up in one station that is not picked up in another, it's going to be fairly clear that it's some interference and it's not an exciting astronomy find that people are finding, but it's probably some GSM station. So that's how it's going to work. I think it will be sufficient the way it's envisaged that all of these issues work in as one. If you pick up a signal perhaps outside of this somewhere, a little bit north of the outer ring, that you can tell that this is just a signal from another source, probably man-made or human-generated source, as opposed to an astronomical observation.
Okay, I understand the Mauritius example, or Kenya, or whatever the most ones are. I'm thinking more of the ones out in South Africa, but outside of the central area. How many of those are there? How would they be protected? Is it not that central issue?
I think at this point, because let me just show you the picture here. If you look at that picture, the very light green concentrated area there around Williston and Carnarvon, that's where the core of the telescope is going to be. The green colored
try to move fast because we still have another presentation, by the way.
I think there was a question from on the impact on the regulations and the SKA in the Northern Cape in terms of employment creation, community development, and what sort of work we do with the public government partners to make sure that there is a coordinated effort around this. What we have seen so far with CAP 7, which is just the 7th issue tenor, is that as a result of that, there were about 800 temporary construction jobs created. When you look at the SKA, it's probably going to be several hundredfold more than that. So comparing 7 to 3 or 4,000 dishes. So it's envisaged that about a huge number of the SKA will be in the Northern Cape. As you can see, the dot becomes fewer and fewer as you go out. Between 50% and 80% of the SKA is likely to be within South Africa, and the related economic impact will then lead to that. So that's comparing between 1,500 perhaps to about 2,500 to the 7. So you can do the multiplication around that. But we have realized that as scientists, we probably won't be able to do a proper web of economic impact analysis. And as a result of that, we have a resident economist within the department that's working on analyzing the economic impact. And I believe in the next couple of months, there will be work that you have finalized around the future economic impact of the mere cut and the SK itself.
DJ? I think the telecom question has not been properly answered in terms of what we're doing with telecom. So maybe Zeppo can do that. But one of the things that I just wanted to clarify is another question which I think have not been asked. I don't think we have the details there of the number of dishes that will be contained in the core. I think that's Honorable Smith's question. You can see the picture, but I think the bulk of the telescope will be in the area. And I think the question that you were asking is that the reason why we're classifying these areas as core, central and coordinated, is that the amount of protection that you require is probably more on the core and less so on the coordinated, on the central and coordinated areas, because it's the core of the telescope that you actually want to pick up the signals from. So I think that's the rationale for the choice of these areas. Telecom, quickly.
I think with telecom, there's two issues. The one is the current landline services, and it's clear that if you improve on the landline services, you're going to increased demand for a growing need for people to use cell phones in the area. What we have been discussing with Telkom and the POC is that there has to be a way that we can start improving on the current services for both voice and
remember that also Transnet had a lot of concerns about the core because of its radio communication systems around the region in trains and other things. But I don't know how far did you solve that?
It became fairly straightforward once we sat around the table with Transnet and with other entities like Telkom, Vodacom, and MTN. What we did, we had this interim regulations advisory committee where we had various service providers, including broadcasters, the National Association of Broadcasters, SABC, Centec, to say what would be your requirements in the regulation. And I can comfortably say that we have managed to reach a common point where we are either all mutually satisfied or equally dissatisfied with the product. But I think at the end of the day, there was a sense of comfort from the various service providers with the level of regulation that was required. You may recall that in 2009, there was an intention that was published in the notice, and that was published in the government gazette to make regulations. It showed the sort of levels that would be acceptable, and none of the entities, including Transnet, were actually opposed to those levels that we stipulated. So it was really consultation that sorted the problem.
Okay, I think I have come to the conclusion of this session. And thank you very much, Dr. Seko, for clarifying the committee on some of the aspects. Actually, the purpose of inviting you was exactly this, because you know this act was passed in 2008, and this committee's term of office started in 2009, and we did go through all the sessions during the previous committee term. But I thought that it was important for this committee also to be taken up board, more especially because 2012, which is a final bidding year, will be actually be on the shoulders of this committee. So this committee has to understand exactly what is entailed. Now that also there are all other new cropping up problems around the region, so it was important that the committee is on board. They understand the details, and I'm very happy that they have put across all the questions of their concerns, and you are here and you've clarified them quite satisfactorily. Thank you very much for that, and also through the DG who has made the effort to make this possible. I would like now to invite the presentation of the second session, which is about the Science and Technology Laws Amendment Bill. DG.
Thanks, Chair. We are trying to connect the machine. We have a disturbance. Can we borrow a machine?
We can have some 5 minutes break once they are setting up the machine, and got some coffee here. You can also revise the HEA more thoroughly and consult about it if there are any points that you could not touch up with.
Yeah.
I think we can continue now. I think you are ready, TG, yeah? Okay, let's continue then, because we don't have much time remaining.
Thanks a million, Chairperson, honorable members, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. So what we'll do in this presentation is we'll give you the background for why we would like to introduce this bill. We will just quickly go through the process that we went through and the consultation and stakeholder engagement, and we'll perhaps give a sense of the purpose of the bill at the highest level, and maybe highlight some key provisions of the bill for each of the public entities that will be affected by the bill. So a little bit of background. In 2004, if you all remember, science and technology function was part of the department or the Ministry of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology. However, in 2004, the Department of Science and Technology was established as a single department. In other words, it was no longer part of the Department of Arts, Culture. And therefore, amendments on acts of public entities under the oversight of the minister were not effected at the time, and we would like to do that now. It's also influenced by the fact that there's been a recent macro reorganization of government, which also necessitated some of the amendments to the pieces of legislation. Just to give you an example, before this new administration, there was a Department of Education. We now have the Department of Higher Education and Training, and therefore some of those organization of government have had implications or impacts on some of the acts governing the institutions that report to the minister. So in August 2010, we presented the draft bill to cabinet, which approved and allowed us to go into a public participation process. And the draft bill in September was published for comment in the Government Gazette. Between October and November, we then received inputs which were incorporated into the bill, and the bill was revised, and where necessary we had further consultation of some of the stakeholders. In February 2010, the bill was further revised because it was submitted to the state law advisors for certification, and the bill was then certified by the state law advisors in April 2011. The bulk of the comments that we received were from the public entities. So the CSIR provided us some comments. The Africa Institute of South Africa gave us comments. The Academy of South Africa, Wits University, and the National Research Foundation. The nature of the comments were really dealing with technical issues, and the bill, in our view, was broadly welcomed by all the stakeholders. So what is the purpose of the bill? Is to effect technical corrections to certain definitions and references associated with the Ministry of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology, as I said, in order to eliminate possible confusion or in order to enhance clarity. We would like to strengthen institutional oversight and governance of the public entities. You will see there are a range of clauses that we are proposing to change that relates to the governance of the institutions, the role of the boards, and the appointment of the CEOs. The amendments, therefore, seek to eliminate possible confusion regarding specifically definitions such as the title of the chief executive officers of some of the public entities. As you would know, some of the public entities have got their heads called the presidents, and we thought maybe the time has come for South Africa to have one president and not many presidents. There are also references to the department and the designation of the portfolio of the minister, as I say, which now requires that we be clear, effect other consequential changes that were necessitated by the recent macro reorganization of the state. I've given an example of the Ministry of Education in relation to the NRF's responsibility and oversight by the two ministries. We now have to make reference to the Ministry of Higher Education and Training. Now, so let's at the high level give you a sense of some of the key provisions from the Scientific Research Council Act. As I've said, it is therefore amending the title of the administrative head of the council from the president of the CSIR to the chief executive officer. It provides for the procedure to be followed prior to the appointment of members of the board to ensure consistency with other public entities. At the moment, as you know, before we have a list of possible members of the board for the public entities, we usually have a panel which is appointed by the minister, and therefore would like to make sure that we are consistent with that practice for the CSIR. And then we'd also like to provide for broad representativity on the board specifically. On the National Advisory Council for Innovation Act, we would like to correct reference that is made, as I've said, to the Department of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology and the portfolio of the minister, because at the time it made reference to the Minister of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology. We would like to limit the term of office of members of the board of the council. At the moment is open-ended, again in order to be consistent with other entities. Members are not expected to serve more than two terms. And then it also provides for the appointment of the full-time Chief Executive Officer of the National Advisory Council on Innovation. At the moment, when the original bill was drafted, the DG was also the CEO of NECI, so I'd like to clarify this role. The National Research Foundation Act amends the title of, again, the head of the NRF from president to CEO. It corrects reference to the portfolio of the minister responsible for science and technology and the Minister of Higher Education and Training, because previously we had one minister for education. Limits the term of office of the board and sets grounds for disqualification for members of the board if they don't attend meetings or if they are involved in criminal activities. The Academy of Sciences corrects reference to the portfolio of the minister, provides for parliamentary funding of the academy. By and large, the academy receives its funding from parliament, so we wanted to make that explicitly in the act. Provides for the process for the election of some senior people of the council of ASAF, which is essentially a board. So how is the chairperson elected, the vice chairperson, the treasurer, and the general secretary of the council. And then it also provides for term of office of the board and the appeal for on termination. The Africa Institute Act corrects reference to the department and the portfolio, changes a range of incorrect references to the council instead of the institute, because the jurisdiction person is the institute. The council is just a board, which is really the structure that then ensures that the institute is managed properly. Limits the term of office of board members, and it also provides a minimum period for meetings of the council per year. And then lastly, the National Natural Scientific Professions Act, it corrects reference to the constitution and portfolio of the minister, provides for broad representativity on the board, and extends the requirement for professional qualification to state employees who are members of the board. So at the highest level, Chair, that's really what we are wanting to do with this act. This time, we agreed with the senior officials of the DST that I will do the presentation, and they are here, not only to support the DG, but they will answer all the questions from the honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. I think it's straightforward, but I'm sure there will be some input coming from members on the bill. Let's hear what members want to say. I've got Honourable Smith, and then Honourable Sheen, and then myself. There's no other member after that.
Thanks, Chair. I presume we're not going into the detail of the bill today. It's just the opening briefing. Yeah. So your slide 6 basically just sets out what your purpose is. And, I mean, clearly most of the amendments are technical and consequential to those technical amendments. So that's fine. I mean, that's just a tidying up exercise. But your second point is that you want to strengthen the institutional oversight and governance. Now, those are substantive provisions as opposed to technical. My question would be, to what extent have you trawled the six acts in question and found that these are the only things that you're intending to change? I mean, in other words, of all the amendments being made to those various acts, all that's required other than technical is, in fact, these governance issues. And there are no other amendments. Is this a general, like a general laws amendment bill, as it were, for the six acts, or is it got a narrower scope? And I would imagine then that once this exercise is done, you would then be completely happy with each of those other principal acts. And then just a question to the department. I presume if we're going to be amending six acts, it might seem a bit silly because it's not very consequential, but it's helpful for us to have the six acts in front of us, so as we amend each one, we're able to cross-reference properly. Thanks.
Yeah, just a couple of general comments on the some of the wording in the amendments. I was particularly interested under the Scientific Research Council Act, okay, where you talk about the President may assign the administration of this act to any minister. So that means that at any stage the CSIR could be hived off to trade and industry or rural development or something. I was just querying why the CSR it doesn't seem to be an amendment, but I just wondered why that was. Also, the terminology of the minister. Previously, it used to be the Minister of Arts, Culture, and Science. It's now the Minister responsible for science. I just wanted to know why we're making that distinction here. Is every cabinet minister now not the Minister of Legal Affairs, whatever it is, or Justice? But is it now the minister responsible for? I just want to know why we have made that particular clarification. And then just a little thing that irritated me throughout this entire thing. I think it's under the NACI legislation. It's the Academy of Science. But I think it's also under NACI. But we'll go into those sort of nitpicky details the next time. But I just wondered why we were actually changing legislation to make an ordinary noun a proper noun, from member with a small m to member with a capital M. I mean, is it necessary for a legislative process?
Is that it? Is there any other member with an input before I make my inputs?
No, sir. I thought you would cover this, but on the question of titles, the presidents, CEOs, principle, I think I agree, and in fact I think we're persuaded by the argument. But in our interaction with these fundis, these scientists, I think in all our engagement, there was a suggestion that the title
CEO, when they engage with their counterpart globally, because globally their counterparts are called presidents. I just want you, therefore, to just indicate to us whether there was any engagement around this, and what is the view of our scientists, therefore, on this question of title. Whilst, of course, I think we agree with you that in countries there must be one president, to have many presidents is confusing, but there's this global challenge in this special field that I would like you to just to share with us around that. Thank you, Chair. That's the only issue.
Honorable Tonya.
No, thank you, Chair. Sorry for that. I just want to check that what are the implications of this amendment? If my memory serves me well, the CEO of HRC, yes, she has then been appointed in the international in the Social Council as the president. Now, if then there is this amendment, what then are the implications of that appointment to her? Because she was CEO of one of the entities in our country. So I just wanted to get that clarity. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Honorable. You just you have just stole what I wanted to add. But did you recall during the strat plan presentation that I did hint in the presence of the HSRC CEO that they saw this is a matter which needs to be resolved here, because the president of the the CEO of the HSRC voiced a concern that HSRC here in South Africa used to be the CEO used to be the president, and actually this is a trend adopted at international level. So when she attends, or when people of her level or like the CSIR attend international conferences, they are faced with this problem that CEOs there are junior than president in these international platforms. Now, she was saying that, therefore, we need to look into this, that institutions like themselves must be aligned with the international practice that they are term presidents. I thought that, I did hint that we will need to look into that as a department and a committee, and make a real deep analysis of what exactly is entailed in those titles at international level, and how it would affect them when they engage at international level. But the recent example is that she has been appointed now the president of the International Social Council. And now, then we come back, maybe without knowing, according to the new act, we put her at the level of CEO, then she may not qualify to be the head of the International Social Council, because only president, or maybe portfolio at international level is only selected from presidents of the various councils in their countries. So I think that's some of the things that we need to look into as we amend the act. This is what the members here were trying to express as a concern. That's what I wanted to draw the attention to. The other thing which I think also the members have hinted to is that these technical realignments that are happening through this amendment, are they going to be only in those six entities, or are they going to look across the entities of the department? Because I have in mind something that once
had a provoked a problem, which is the NRF Board Act, the act that governs the appointment of NRF Board. It's not the same, and that has also come back to the committee, because HSRC was also questioning why they are governed by a different act of appointing the board than what governs NRF Board and then many other boards that are across the... So I was thinking that therefore these are all the things that we need to look into when we amend this act, which you must take into consideration. The last one is about the unregulated entities. There are many scientific oriented entities that are unregulated, but that are causing a lot of frustration within especially the previously disadvantaged communities, which we have to look into. Those are the three things that I thought we should highlight here.
Thanks, honorable members, and thanks, Chair. I'll start with the question of Honorable Smith around the issues of governance. If you look into the text very, very carefully, as we've said, it's about trying to ensure that the issues of board appointments, the terms of boards, are all more or less the same. And therefore, it's probably a light governance and oversight responsibility that we are doing just to try and harmonize that. We think we've done that. We might have probably missed one or two. Now, our view is that this proposed bill is, as you say, a general cleaning up process and a tidying up process. We are of the opinion as a department that if there are policy shifts in terms of what we'd like to do, and maybe there's a need for us to look at the mandates of the entities that report to the ministry, we can probably at some point come back with proposals on specific issues around the act for that public entity. We didn't think we would be able to do this year, and therefore we hope that the committee would be favorable to us should we in a year's time or 18 months come back with some specific, but there will not be, as I say, it will be because of the policy direction that perhaps the minister is signaling and would like, and the implications of those policy directions to the existing mandates of the entities. The second request of us ensuring that you have the 6Xs for the entities that are being discussed here. I think, Brian, this is a request that is fair, and we'll try and provide those 6Xs for reference as you consider the changes. I'm now referring to Honorable Shin's question. I'm unable to respond to the capital M from the small M in the drafting, and maybe I'll refer this question to Brian. The Minister responsible for science and technology, I have a feeling Dr. Kobela would like to take that up, but I can take the first bite on the cherry. I must say I didn't get the first part of the question, and I at the time I think I had left the act there where you are raising something of hiving off the CSIR into another ministry. You can talk to that. Mlapo will then take the first two, and then Brian will take the drafting question. I'm not so sure this concerns by the presidents around, you know, presidents and CEOs being junior. I'm not finding that practice where I'm traveling. Maybe organizations that have a strong affinity on the research part of the innovation chain, maybe some institutions still have this nomenclature of the president, but I really don't think it will compromise their standing or how they are perceived by their counterparts. I just want to make a simple metaphor, an example, in the way that directors general and permanent secretaries are also being called. In South Africa, we are called directors general. In other parts of the world, the people who do my work, they are called permanent secretaries. I think it's a nomenclature sometimes and a preference, but we'll be happy between now and the next time we come to just look at this matter and a little bit of a benchmark. But we also would have to be careful about nomenclature or names that are associated with these, which were also 1960s, 1940s, which are also evolving into perhaps the direction that we are taking, but we'll be happy to do some benchmarking.
I think it's just at that point. I think because generally speaking, once the bill is here, the stakeholders that are affected, they necessarily have got also to come and make inputs. And at that time in particular, I think that's when we will want them to explain the trend, and I would like, I would wish you to be here also, so that before we finalize the act, we know what we... we don't want to finalize the act now, and after 18 months we have to amend it again because of this, because there are new facts about what they raised.
Thanks. And then, Chair, you asked a question. I think that addresses... Honorable Nongonyan and Dunja's question, I think it's in the same category as well. And then the issue of the chair around unregulated entities, I think we can look at them, but at the moment we were just looking at those that the minister has oversight responsibilities for. And then the area of harmonization, as I've said in earlier on, we are really trying to harmonize within the entities that report to the ministry. We think we've done that as best as we can in terms of the board. I know the NRF had also raised some issues around the term of the board, and those were taken into account in ensuring that there is harmonization.
Actually, it's not like that, DG. See, the acts that the model of the acts that it's not about the duration, but it is a very big concern. You see, there are three models to appoint boards, as what exists in the secretary to the National Assembly here. There is a model that is used by the Portfolio Committee of on Communication. I'm sure you've seen it when they interview the boards, they do everything themselves. Then there is another model which we adopted as this committee to govern the appointment of the HSRC board. Then there is the third model which the NRF used, that was before we were the Department of Science and Technology, that they used, which is different. So these are all the things, and then they come to us, these other entities, that why are we governed by a different way than that one, because that one has an advantage, this one doesn't have advantage to us, and so forth. So I think this is very, very important. Actually, Parliament has said that, as one said, that at the level of the chairperson's forum, we need to actually streamline all the appointment of boards that we categorize, that the boards that are probably responsible for this and that, and that they will be governed by this model, because there are three models that exist. I think these are some of the things that we must take into consideration as we develop this.
Thanks, Chair. I understand now what you're raising, and you are right. I can speak from the heart on this matter you are raising and say that we would appreciate the input of the Portfolio Committee, because sometimes it does, even for us, worry, as you say, that the models are different. So if we can provide clarity, if we can provide input into the Portfolio Committee discussion around what we think, would try and find the middle ground of ensuring that the Portfolio Committee is aware of the people who are appointed into the boards, but the process is just about the right one in terms of not being too cumbersome to an extent of rendering the appointments of the board I don't want to use the word ineffective, but delay the process in such a way that we could end up with a situation where there's a compromise on governance because of those delays. But we're happy to make inputs into our own experiences around these processes. But I don't think for us we can put a preferred model, but this is something we would assume Parliament would like to probably have their own views on this.
Equally, also the appointment of the boards, we should not be speeded up to the compromise of the transformation processes that we are engaged in as this government.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Kobela, you want to pick up the two issues Minister responsible for and the issues around the wedding on the HSRC and the likely implications, and Brian can take the capital M, small m.
Yes, capital M, small m. Just to maybe add one or two words to what you have just indicated through the chair, I suspect one of the issues that the chair has raised is a matter that may require substantive engagement between the executive and the legislature about how best to go forward with the matter of governance of our public entities and their appropriate oversight. Prior to any consideration being given to any introduction of amendments to legislation going forward. And there may be other matters beyond the cleaning up process that is currently on the table as introduced by the Minister. And like the Director General has indicated, I think it would be valuable for us to reflect on the matter of CEO and President, because the current incumbents on those portfolios are actually designated as chief executive officers. So the legislation currently says president and CEO. So it is not necessarily redesignating them differently as such. But it is certainly a matter that will... different views have been expressed, as you are aware, Chair, and there's no intention to diminuvi the position. The stature of the position is to be strengthened. They will continue to be accounting officers in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So there's no, it's just nomenclature, as the Director General has indicated. Chairperson, on the other matters around Section 20, it may be for the members and yourself on page 4, where it says substitution of Section 20 of Act 46 of 1988, item 10. It talks about the following section may be substituted by the Section 20 of the Scientific Research Act of 1998. That statement is actually in the current Act. The only amendment is the deletion of the word state, where we no longer refer to the president as the state president. He is our president, and or she, whoever is so designated. And the powers are to assign legislation by proclamation exists not just within this act, but in other statutes as well, constitutionally given to the president, and that happened in the recent macro organization of state. So what you might look at is the peculiarity that this is embedded in this particular act, but the power given to the president to assign any act appropriately given whatever circumstances prevail is a matter that is already enshrined in law. So there's nothing untoward as far as this is concerned, other than just the deletion of the word state. Chair, the second one was around the what is it? Minister responsible. Yes. Yes, not Minister of. Chairperson, through you, you will recall that the recent macro organization of state created some very interesting dynamics. I mean, we've had some previous to this one, but this is probably the biggest of late. It may be valuable in the event that we face another macro reorganization that a minister responsible doesn't come and introduce yet another amendment bill simply to change the title of the Minister of Science and Technology to the Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation. And so this is an attempt to embed efficiency without taking away the substance of the portfolio responsibility. So it's the intention is really to find ways and means of making sure that laws are enabling without detracting from the substance. But I think our colleagues from the legal would take the big M's and the small M's and the tiny ones as well, I suppose.
And the pillow.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. The aim of inserting a new definition in the Act, which is a member with a capital M, was basically to make a distinction between, we've got two sets of members, a member of the Academy and a member of the Council. And the Act, whilst there has been an attempt in a couple of instances to qualify by saying either member of the Council or member of the Academy, there are a number of areas where it just refers to member. Then there is confusion as to whether you're referring to the member of the Council or member of the Academy. So we didn't want to go to each and every instance and change or make a qualification as to whether this is a member of the Academy or member of the Council. So we then decided that we're going to insert a new definition with a member, capital M. So wherever the word member with a capital M is used in the Act, then the definition says this is a member of the Academy, as also opposed to the member of the Council, which will be written in full. So it was a matter of ensuring that there's clarity and eliminate any confusion as to which member are you talking about in the Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does that clarify? Yes, it's just that you must be careful that those that are described as small M, they will not feel that they are undermined. I think, are there any other inputs, members? If not, I suggest therefore that we can release the presenters. And thank you very much for all the effort to come and clarify us on this. We will now be able to get engaged and started with processing of this issue. I don't think that, as I've just described, that it would have any controversial deliberations when we invite probably the other stakeholders, except those who want to be president and you want to demote them to CEOs. That may be controversial, but we can deal with it in Parliament in an amicable way. Yes, and thank you very much again for coming, and I hope we will still interact during the process. Since this legislation has been introduced to Parliament, the regulations and the rules and regulations of Parliament provide that we must then concentrate and focus directly on processing this. So we will be processing this depending on the controversies that can come in. But we hope that it will not take us very long. And all those kinds of engagements that we need between us and aligning some of these new definitions, nomenclature, whatever, we will also be able to listen to the stakeholders so that they give us their international experience and probably their deep understanding of what it entails to be changed from old titles to new ones or new ones to old, whatever. So I think we'll engage during that process.
think you can't be released now, all of you, except members of the committee, because we were supposed also, as you move around, I'm talking to the members now, we were supposed to also look into the program according the committee program, since there has been the introduction of this legislation. We had to amend our program, but now also we need to re-amend it again because of the last 2 weeks where we did not convene. We need to realign the dates and other things and agree, and also look into the legislation as there are issues that have cropped up, which probably need also that we re-invite the department together with some of these stakeholders like HSRC that feel undermined when their titles are changed, so if we engage with them here before we finish this legislation. So we must therefore work out a program which is going to accommodate all those small potholes. We will draft it with my secretary. We'll look into it in line with rules of parliament, and then we'll probably look at it as a committee next week and to adopt it, you see. And for today therefore we will not deal, we'll adjourn this item for next week. Thank you very much, honorable members. Yeah, we are now adjourned. Yes,
Chair, I wrote you a letter about 2 weeks.
Oh, yes.
I'd like a response to that.
No, I do have it here. I do have a response here. You just said, look, this is the response from which we based our report.
Can you just tell us briefly what it is? I mean, I would like to call... I'd
like the committee records to show that I did not support the budget, that I actually registered my, that I reserved my position. And then what is published now in the ADC says that the committee supported the report.
No, according to that document, which is based on the rules and regulations of Parliament, a viewpoint in the committee of the reservation of a small minority party is not recorded in the report, but it is recorded in the minutes, and it is in the minutes, and that that rule is there. That's why I said read the rules, because it's all there. So it is recorded in the minutes that we had a reservation, but it cannot be recorded in the report. Sorry?
My letter was addressed to you personally.
But now this is recorded, why I have given the response of the rules and regulations. Yes, these are rules and regulations of Parliament that we base our report from the rules and regulations of Parliament as to how they should be prepared. But your reservations are also recorded in the minutes in accordance with those rules. Yeah, but I've treated it at committee level so that all members of the committee, it should not become a conflict between me and you. It should be a committee thing. Yeah. Because it is a committee.
I wrote to you personally a personal response, I thought would have been a basic courtesy.
If it was a personal response, it is out of order then.
Yeah.
For us to entertain it. But now that you have already shared with us, I think it's in order.
It couldn't be my response alone, because it was a committee report. It wasn't a chairperson's report. So it has got to be brought back to committee. It's a concern of a member about the report of a committee which reflected what she feels was not what she said or she endorsed. And he then has to bring it to committee. That's why I'm making it recorded. That the rules and regulations guided the committee to report it as such, and those are the rules and regulations that I'm handing you over instead of saying that, go and read the rules. I have really compiled the rules again for you